Good afternoon. Welcome to the Tuesday show for the Athletic Hockey Show. We're 2 days ahead of the one true Thanksgiving. It's the only version of the holiday that's recognized on this podcast. Should be the only version of this holiday that's recognized across the United States. Producer Jeff has just dropped into the video call to give me the finger. He's a proud Canadian. We don't need to get into that. But happy holiday week, everybody. Sean Gentile here. No Custance yet again. Sorry for all six of you that will probably some kind of deal breaker, but he'll be back eventually. He's doing, as I said last week, much more important things than BSing with me about nonsense. But we have another really good replacement here. Max Boltman covers the Detroit Red Wings for The Athletic. What's up, dude?
Not a lot, man. I'm starting to develop a theory, though, that Craig is, he's like the word and phrase bans that you guys have accepted since the dawn of the show have finally gotten to him. And he's taking all this time because he knows he can't string together a month straight without them.
It's like, it's a prison of his own design. Like, yes. He's worse with that stuff than I am. He's got way more like vocal tics and vocal crutches than I do. So he's like run out of stuff to say. He's tired of plugging his book. All these things we hear from him every week. He's just taking a couple breaks from, but he'll be back. So me and Max are here. We're gonna carry you through not the last pre-holiday episode, but you know, the last episode of the show that matters. That's as right. I've said. And we have Josh Yowie on the show. It's a dude I've worked with quite a bit over the years, both Pittsburgh guys. He's obviously the Penguins beat writer here. It's been a big week in Pittsburgh, dude. Not just because of the sales stuff either. I mean, it's obviously that was the big bit of news that dropped last week is that the Lemieux Group selling to Fenway Sports. You know, that's a big deal in and of itself, and we're certainly going to get into that with Josh. But the other thing is that the Penguins are kind of making the move that a lot of us were expecting from them, and not a moment too soon. They've got whatever six points out of their last six, and it was time to get moving. I think that team did a good job to stay in the race and keep their head above water, you know, over the first whatever 6 weeks of the season, because no Crosby, no Malkin, injuries across the board, COVID problems, blah blah blah. They did a good job to, you know, their points percentage was about 50% a couple last week or whatever. It's a miracle they got to that point, honestly. I think Brian Burke had kind of spoken about that last week, right? But they're on the move. They had a pretty fruitful Canada trip, and Josh was there for all of it. So
yeah, I mean they gave up like one goal on the whole swing, right? Montreal, Toronto, and and Winnipeg. I think they only gave up one goal the entire Canadian swing.
Jari's playing well. I think that's sort of, you know, we'll get into detail with this with Josh, you know, later on. But I think that was a big storyline for their season, was like just how good could Tristan Jarry play before people felt some level of confidence in him to like keep it together moving forward, because he's been really inconsistent at best in the regular season for his career so far. And obviously he hit the self-destruct button against the Islanders in the playoffs last year. So he had a lot of proving to do, and I'm still not sure that he's there, but you know, like you said, dude, three straight really good games. His save percentage is up around .930 for the season. You know, he's been really good. And I think that's one of the interesting things about them, right? Is like, is he good enough for them to have real faith in him moving forward? Not just the fan base, but that front office as well. Because, you know, you look at Casey DeSmith and all that stuff. That's a really interesting goaltending situation.
Well, I mean, is he kind of in the individualized version of living the Toronto Maple Leafs experience, where nothing until the playoffs is even going to register for him, like in either direction?
I felt that way. It's funny. I'm feeling that way about the Leafs now, kind of in tandem with Jarry. Like there's a certain level, whether you're talking about a team or a player, that once they hit some level of excitement or some level of confidence just sets in inevitably. Whether you're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs and everything they've done and not done over the last 10, 20, 50 years, or you're talking about Tristan Jarry, who, I mean, single-handedly, you know, dropped the playoff series of a few months ago. I think that team and that player are kind of both at the point now where you feel like you can have some confidence in them. You feel like you can bet at least a little bit on them, you know, if only in the regular season, right?
100%. I mean, this was not playoff hockey this week, but I will say he did just go, his last two games were head-to-head with two of the goalies who have played the best in the league this season. Jack Campbell and Connor Hellebuck went toe-to-toe with him, won those games. You know, like you win 3-1 and 2-0. Those are goalie wins, right, in the NHL. Like you should, you give up two or even three goals in the NHL and you give yourself a really good chance to win. That's what Toronto and Winnipeg did to Pittsburgh, but Jari was better. And so now the Penguins, I think I woke up today. I don't know if they're in it by playoff, points percentage, but I believe they're in a playoff spot as we speak right now by points.
Yeah. I fell asleep during most of that third period last night against Winnipeg because I'm old now. So I woke up with 5 minutes left in the game and it was like, oh, they're up 3-1. What happened? But yeah, I mean, it's proving time. It's puckering time because of the kind of new age NHL adage that we've all kind of internalized over the last couple of years, right? Where it's like, if you're not in a playoff spot come American Thanksgiving, you are in deep, deep shit. And it's as true now as it was a couple of years ago, honestly, because we haven't had a normal season. We haven't had, there were no games on Thanksgiving last year and the season before that blew up. But the rule of thumb, and I know Elliot Friedman was one of the first guys that I can remember kind of bringing this up, and Dom wrote about it extensively a couple years ago. But the rule of thumb for anybody who doesn't know is that around 80% of the teams that are in playoff spots on American Thanksgiving, and again, on Thanksgiving, there is no such thing as Canadian Thanksgiving. Around 80% of those teams that are in those spots on that Thursday in late November end up making the playoffs. So we're here, dude. We're two weeks out. So you can look at these teams and obviously that's because the loser point, right? Like it's just tough to make up grounds when you got three point games. But it's time to do the assessment. It's time to go through these teams and figure out, you know, who we can kind of pencil in, and then which of the 2.7 teams statistically or like whatever it is we should be worried about. Like it's time to kind of calculate that.
Yeah, the math says three of the teams that are in will about three of the teams that we're in will fall out, and about three of the teams that are out will work their way in. So I guess we should probably pick who's who.
All right, we're gonna go through, like, go through the wild card standings as indicated on NHL.com. We'll start by points, but we'll go by point percentage too, because that's just as important. It's wild, dude, there's such a disparity in games played, even still now. There's a lot of outlier teams, whether you're talking about Boston, who's, you know, played whatever, 8 games in 24 days or something crazy. You know, you got Philly playing 16 games and whatever. So points percentage is your friend in this exercise. We're definitely going to use it because you have teams playing as few as 15 games, then teams playing as many as 20, right? There's a pretty serious disparity there.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you look at the Islanders, who have played, what, two home games? One home game? Have they played two home games? Yeah, two home games.
Yeah, they played they played two because they lost both of them. They got them in Seattle kind of are working in the same boat. They got that new arena bumper at the start of the season in case something bad happened and there was like a two week or three week or four week backlog in construction, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're the team that like should be the most like scared at this point based on that old axiom. They're 5-8-2, way out of the playoffs right now, but at the same time they have all those games in hand and they're like all home games. And so they're like the one team that you could say in that metro, like, you really like their odds to shoot up, even though they're way back from everybody else.
It's true. It's true. They got 5 games in hand, but they're 5-8-2. They've got 12 points. Their points percentage is 400, which is third from last in the Eastern Conference, which is insane. It's getting dark early for them because here's who they're behind in the Metro alone. They're behind Carolina and Washington and New York and Columbus and Pittsburgh and Philly and New Jersey. And then comes the Islanders. They're eighth in the wild card standings, that's the killer, right, dude? There's so many teams that they have to hopscotch there, and they're playing everyone thought that like once they open that arena and it seems great and all that stuff, everyone's excited about it. They go in and immediately lose two straight. Their losing streak is at six. Everybody loved this team. Dom's model loved them. I picked them to go to the cup final. Finally, someone who I'm pretty tight with picked them to pick them to win it all. I don't recall
I don't know who that is
exactly.
Be.
Who is that?
I don't know who that would be.
They're out. I'm ready to call it. Like,
I'm not calling it, but I will say I'm way more worried about the number of teams than I am the gap. Like, I'm not sweating.
Absolutely. That's it. You look at that in a vacuum and you're like, all right, you know, it's the Islanders. They're still pretty good. They have these games in hand and blah, blah. And you look at those wild card standings and you're like, I'm not sure how they're going to hopscotch all these teams, right? They're four points. They have three games in hand on the Sabres, and they're 4 points behind them and playing terribly. Matt Barzal not having a good season. There's plenty of stuff to worry about them, right? Like the process hasn't been there. The results certainly have. It's scary. I know Arthur Staple talked about them a lot on the Monday show with Ian and Haley, but oobly.
It's the Pennsylvania teams that would scare me if I'm the Islanders, because number one, they only have one game in hand on the Flyers. And mm-hmm. while I do think Carter Hart is, you know, making the Flyers look a lot better than they really are right now, that's a big gap. It's 7 points with just one game in hand. And, you know, that's a tough road to make up with the loser point. And it's Pittsburgh as they come on strong here. Like, Pittsburgh, they do have more games in hand on, but like, that's a team that has just as much reason to think that they're going to get a lot better over the remaining 60 whatever games of the season as the Islanders do, because they're getting healthy. They got Sid back. Like, I think there's every reason to believe the Islanders can get improved by just as much as, sorry, the Penguins can improve by just as much as the Islanders can.
Charlie O'Connor wrote something good today, just kind of outlining, because you look at the results for Philly and it's you're like, okay, what's the problem here? They're 8-5-3. You know, they're keeping it together. Once you open the hood a little bit, though, stuff gets ugly for them, right? Their underlings are bad. Their power play is abysmal. Probably long-term-ish injuries to Ryan Ellis and Kevin Hayes. But there's reason to be skeptical of them. And they were in there as recently as yesterday based on points. And they have two games in hand on Pittsburgh. Depending on how you want to classify them, I think they're in some danger of falling out. But the one we got to talk about specifically is Columbus, right? Like, credit to them, 6-4-0 in their last 10. They're on a little bit of a heater. The underlying numbers are improving. They're in that wild card spot based on points and point percentage, which is worth noting. But man, they're the one, right? Like, those, like, that's the team that I look at and you're like, God bless them for doing what they've done so far. But lots of reasons to think that this isn't sustainable. And, you know, if a team like, all it's going to take is a team like, you know, Boston playing enough games to get up there and Pittsburgh riding the ship, which it certainly seems like they've done. Columbus is the team that's in position in the East where you're like, I don't think this is going to last, right?
If we're looking for three, they are number one with a bullet on the team. So they're going to fall out. And in this, I mean, look, I saw Columbus last week and I thought they showed a lot of fight. They came back on the Red Wings late. I really like Cole Sillinger, their big rookie out of the 2021 draft. Mm-hmm. But to look at the overall 10-6 start for them, I see a ton of schedule wins here. Arizona and Seattle, their first two wins to open the season. They had Detroit. They had Buffalo. They had another one with Arizona. They got Dallas early in the year when Dallas is still probably, I wouldn't say, woken up yet.
I don't think that's going to happen at all.
They got Colorado at the start of November before Colorado turned back into a juggernaut, right? Like, I'm not trying to take, I guess I am trying to take it away from Columbus. I'm not trying to disrespect Columbus, but I am taking it away from Columbus. I do not think, I mean, they're the team that's fallen out of this.
Well, the funny part of all this is, like, we're looking at this last night, right, when we're going over the standings. And, like, not that I would ever imply that the Detroit Red Wings were going to be an actual playoff contender. But sure. I think they're a great example of how scheduling can lie this early in a season, right? Because obviously you're as tapped into them as anybody. I don't even think I quite realized how much, because everyone's like, you know, oh, good for the Red Wings, like Moritz Seider's this and Lucas Raymond's that, and everyone's excited to see them do anything after being in the wilderness for so long. And again, not to disrespect them or take anything away from them, but like you look at that early schedule, not just the teams that they were playing overall, but the times that they caught the teams that they were playing. They caught Vegas at the absolute bottom, right? They caught Chicago at the absolute bottom, and they fattened up on them, right? So that's how you see Vegas. That's how you see Detroit. You know, 19 points in 20 games, 475 point percentage. They're theoretically in the thick of it here, but you were going over their schedule, dude, and it's wild. Right.
Yeah. The wins are Vancouver, Columbus, Chicago. They do have two really good wins at Washington and against Edmonton, back when Edmonton was like 50% power play, complete mm-hmm. death machine. Those are their two. And that, you know, though, I think those are probably the two wins that sparked the most dialogue. But yeah, beyond that, you mentioned catching Vegas at the right time. OT win over Buffalo, OT win over Montreal. Like the signs were there that this was not built to last when you just looked at where the bulk of those points were coming from.
Right. And now it's like, I mean, just tomorrow night, St. Louis, that's a tough one. Buffalo, then they're at Boston. And then in December, their schedule gets pretty ugly, right? They got games against the Islanders, which are never tough. More against St. Louis, Columbus, Carolina, Minnesota, another Columbus game, the Devils, the Rangers. Like there's not the only like pencil it in win you have for them in December. And whatever, maybe I shouldn't even say this, but like Seattle, right? Those are just two whatever teams kind of going at it. So, you know, they're an example, I think, of, you know, the benefits of soft early season scheduling. The other team I wanted to talk about was the Rangers. They're third in the Metro. They're 11-4-3. Points percentage is .694, which is fourth in the conference. It's, you know, whatever. That's all great. They also have a goal differential of 0, which is not something you typically see from a team that's 11-4-3 or whatever it is. Their X goal is 46.05, which is third from the bottom in the NHL. You know, they're down there with the Blackhawks and the Coyotes and the Senators and the Sharks and some pretty bad, pretty whatever teams. Do you think that they've banked enough points when you look at that division? And they have 25, so they're 5 points ahead of Columbus and Pittsburgh, 6 ahead of Philly. Did they have enough points banked to kind of ride this out and stay in either the 3 or the 4 spot there?
Everything in me is screaming that this is goalie. This is Chris Kreider shooting 25% or whatever he's shooting right now. But you make a very good point that at some point the gap just gets too crazy because they're right there with Washington. They have a better points percentage than Tampa Bay right now. You know what I mean? Like they are that far ahead. And at the quarter point of the season, you know, it's still early, but they've given themselves a huge cushion. They're not even one of the teams that's played like 20 games. I think they're still 17,
they're
18.
They're at 18.
Right.
To have 25 points banked through 18 games, this isn't like a Columbus situation, right? Where they're 20 or, you know, I don't know, man. It's tough for me. Like, I get all the reasons that this is going on. Shesterkin's been great and blah, blah, blah. But oh, brother, it's tough for me to look at a team that's 2 points behind the Capitals, even if they regress here and kind of fall back to where we think they can or will or whatever. It's tough to imagine them falling out of it entirely. So, like, where are we at in the East? Our teams falling out of position? We'll go with one. It's certainly Columbus. Yesterday, when they were in position, would have been the Flyers, because again, good as Carter Hart's been, there's a lot for them to work through there. And we'll put an asterisk next to the Rangers, because I think we're both squishy on them.
We want to get there
in some level. Skeptical. I know it would be, dude. It would be fun. I always root for chaos, but I don't know, man. It just feels like they've banked a few too many at this point. We shall see.
Here's my question for you. How about St. Louis? Like, I mean, we talked mostly East so far.
Yeah.
But St. Louis is in it right now by points percentage. Do you see in by points? Do you see them sticking around up there in the playoffs?
I think Dom has like poisoned the discourse on the Blues with me, because I've just like internalized the fact that they're trash. I don't even know if that's true. But the underlyings are bad, right? Like I don't know if they really have the sort of goalie who you can rely on to go on a heater. Like, it's not like a Rangers situation where you can say like, yeah, they're not that good, but there's going to be stretches where Shesterkin, you know, steals three or four for them, or gets them 5 points out of eight that they otherwise shouldn't have had. I don't know, dude. I'm honestly not sure where I stand on St. Louis. I think Luis Chishin has poisoned the well for me.
Well, if we have to find teams here, they're the obvious Western team that you want to gravitate toward. But 100%. I will say, they do have kind of the push of young talent and new additions here that you Kyrou and Thomas have been everything that St. Louis wanted them to be so far this year. Buchnevich, like, coming in has been a big boost. I mean, I don't think he's dominating at like a crazy level, but he's come in and immediately been a really productive player for them. I could see it. I do think goaltending is still my question for them. Like, Binnington's been good, but to your point, not elite to the point that you're going to say he's going to, you know, take it for 2 weeks and just give you that 7-1-2 stretch that teams kind of need to cement themselves as a playoff team in a loser point league. But, you know, up front, like, you're starting to see a team that has the blend of depth and high end and veteran and young to do it.
No, definitely. I love that forward group, right? Like, I think that's a really interesting group of players on paper, and the results have been fine. You just look at some of the underlyings and you're just like, I don't know how this is going to hold up for an 82 game season. What I will say is they're tied for second in the division right now with Winnipeg. The Avs are in the rearview mirror, right? Like, they've turned it on in the last couple weeks. They're doing it without McKinnon. 9-5-1 overall, 633 point percentage. Yes, they're fifth in the division right now, but, you know, that's just based on standings points, right? So it's impossible for me to look at this and not believe that by the time it's all said and done, the Colorado, who, by the way, has only played 15 points, that's the reason they're not in there already. It's not because of the slow start. It's because they just haven't, you know, they're three games behind St. Louis and Winnipeg. I think the question then kind of turns into, who do you like more, St. Louis or the Jets? And they're weirdly similar teams, right? Like, they're teams that have, Winnipeg's 5-on-5 numbers are better now than they have been over the last couple of years, but they're sort of similar in the respect that both have kind of outpaced their percentages over the last couple of years. Like, I think I would soft lean towards Winnipeg to, you know, in terms of staying in the top three, if you think that the top two or some combo of Minnesota and Colorado. But that's an interesting one, man. The central division is fascinating to me, because everybody was talking it up as being pretty, you know, tough and competitive and whatever. People thought that Dallas was going to bounce back, and people thought that Chicago was going to make the leap and yada yada. And those teams are just not real factors right now. But you do have that, you know, you do have that group at 3, 4, 5 that makes you wonder.
Well, the more I look at this, I think they both might make it, St. Louis and Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at the Pacific, and I'm not sure any of those teams that aren't in it currently, and we can talk about the merits of whether we think Anaheim is legit or not in a minute, but I certainly don't see the Pacific getting two wild cards. They might get one, but I don't think they're getting two.
The question then turns into, like, who are the two wild cards, right? Like, you assume Vegas is going to move up at some point. Nashville is in position, and they're the ones that are in trouble, right? Like, if you figure that the wild card spots end up being some combo of Vegas, Colorado, Winnipeg, and or St. Louis, right? In some order, Nashville is sort of the one who you're expecting to fall off, right? I mean, they're playing well. Matt Duchene's playing well. UC Saros is one of the best goalies in the league, and blah blah. But it's tough to look at them and think they're going to be hanging around. And yeah, I'm willing to say that Anaheim's going to be in the mix toward the end. Like I'm okay with saying that just because of how soft the rest of the Pacific is, honestly.
Yeah, it's a good reason. I mean, they get the other California teams there, and they're still being propped up by immense rookie and young player scoring. Mm-hmm. That like it's fair to treat with a little bit of skepticism. Although, you know, Troy Terry, I think has probably done this long enough now this season to buy it. But you got to see it from a lot of their other young guys. So, I think it's fair to buy Anaheim, but I'm not there yet. Give me 10 more games.
It's a soft buy. All right. So where do we stand on this? We got the Blue Jackets falling out. We got the Predators falling out, and we're intently watching the Rangers and to a lesser extent, St. Louis and Winnipeg in the Central. It's settled. We're gonna lose. We're gonna lose two teams this year, instead of three.
I'm in on Winnipeg. Uh-huh. You referenced that poor soul friend of yours who had the Islanders in the Cup. I would dare say he had him over Winnipeg in the Cup.
Oh my God! I didn't know that part of it, dude. That's ugly.
He was trying to go out on a limb and really call a shot, and I don't know how that's gonna work out for him. But
love it.
Too early to punt.
Too early. And again, like one of the teams we gave short shrift there was the Penguins, because we knew we were going to be talking to Yoey. We're going to jump to that talk with him with him next. Lots of stuff happening in Pittsburgh. Very, very, very busy on and off the ice. No better guy to talk about it than Josh. We'll be with him after we hit this commercial break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we're psyched to be joined by my buddy Josh Yoey, calling from the side of the road, somewhere on the other side of the Peace Bridge. Dude, did the 5 a.m. flight from Winnipeg to Toronto and then the drive back down through Buffalo to Pittsburgh? Good God, dude.
Yeah, I'm coming to you, I believe, from Patty Kane's hometown in Hamburg, New York. And I wanted to get out of Winnipeg quickly. I wanted to get home ASAP. So that's just the way things roll. But it is a pleasure to be joining you, gentlemen.
The pleasure is ours. All right, so let's talk about this Canada trip. I think that was what the Penguins needed. That group did a good job of keeping it around 500, given everything that was swirling, all the injuries, all the COVID stuff, right? But it was time to move. I think when you look at the standings and there's all those teams ahead of them, you know, come Thanksgiving, it's like you got to start stacking points here. So I think six and three games against the Canadian teams was a necessary move there, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing with these Penguins. Like, they've had guys like Rodriguez and Danton Heinen who have actually really saved the day and been very good. But they weren't going to be, you know, 10-4 after 14 games with those guys leading the way either. So that's just the way it is. And I actually think they're in perfectly good position given everything they have been through. But you're right. Mm-hmm. They needed to put some points together. And I didn't know if, you know, at Toronto, not Winnipeg, were necessarily the places to do so. But to their credit, they were pretty good. And I guess the biggest story of all, Sean, is Tristan Jarry. I mean, look at the numbers. He's one of the best goalies in the league right now. Mm-hmm. He was the biggest question mark entering the season. He has been a rock.
I mean, yeah, we were talking about Jarry before we had you on, Josh. And our question is, like, with a guy who had the playoffs he had last year, like, how much stock do you put into the regular season at all with him? Like, he's obviously been unreal to go through the stretch that he just had in Canada and give up one goal. Like, that's, it doesn't get better than that in the NHL, but especially like from the Penguins' decision-making standpoint, like how much stock can they put into him in the regular season right now? Like, are we to the point where it's all just kind of like prologue to the playoffs here? Or is this something that you think people can put a lot of stake in right now?
think they do put some stock in it. You know, if he had maybe had three or four playoff series in a row where he imploded, maybe it would be fair to, you know, kind of call him a playoff choke artist. Like, I see it on, you know, social media all the time. None of this means anything until May. Like, well, I think it does. I mean, you know, what he went through after that series, and it was interesting. He actually talked for the first time about a conversation he had with Ron Hextall, and Jari implied that he thought he was going to be traded over the summer. And Hextall essentially said to him in August, no, we're not trading you. You're the guy. And that kind of helped him relax, I think. And to see him play the way he has, I think it's really encouraging. And yeah, he still has to do it in the playoffs, but you have to get the team to the playoffs first. And you have to prove that that all-star run 2 years ago wasn't some fluke. And maybe he's doing that right now. So sure, he'll have plenty to prove in the postseason when that time comes. But I still take some stock in this. I think the organization does too. He's always had the physical ability. The guy was a second-round pick, which is a really athletic goaltender. I want to give him some credit right now. I don't think it's necessarily fair to him to say, well, none of this means a damn thing until the playoffs come. I disagree. I think he's playing at a high level, and that's an encouraging sign for the Penguins.
I think the Crosby thing is interesting too, because Sullivan consistently over the last whatever 2 weeks has always been, and this is even before the COVID comeback, this is, you know, after the wrist comeback, he's been kind of slow rolling the Crosby comeback, right? Where he's like, you know, you got to be realistic about this. Like, he hasn't played a hockey game in 5 months. Like, he seems like he's keeping expectations down, which I feel like is kind of a smart move, because like you said, you know, Crosby's not, I mean, I know that it always comes with the asterisk, he's getting older and all that stuff, but he's got to figure he's going to round into form more than he has.
You do. He has looked strikingly ordinary in his six games. Even his first game back before COVID with the wrist, it did not play well that night. I wouldn't say he played poorly on this trip, but he still only had 1 point in three games. I mean, that's not what we're used to seeing from Crosby. And part of that is because the power play is an absolute disaster right now. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have any explosiveness in his skating. I suspect it will come. And now that he's 34, you always think, okay, is this, you know, are we seeing some decline here? Because that does happen at that age. That's not an abnormal thing. Or are you seeing a guy who didn't have training camp and who has barely practiced with the team? And, you know, guys in their 30s typically do take a little longer to get going when the season starts. So I suspect that's what it is. I saw some signs last night of him rounding into form a little bit. The legs just aren't there at all. Like, I've never seen him be the first person to go to the bench at the end of a shift more than he did these past three games, especially in Montreal. But all three games, like, whoa, he was just gas. You could see it, and that's not something you usually say about him.
I saw you had some... You got some thoughts on what happens whenever Malkin comes back in terms of who they should play him with, right? Like your boy, super sniper Danton Heinen, should he get a look on the second line whenever it returns?
Well, maybe. Here's my thought: Jason Zucker. He's not quite the player the Penguins thought they were getting 2 years ago. He doesn't suck. He just, you know, hasn't been as prolific in terms of scoring as anyone expected. The thing with him, he doesn't really play well with Crosby, and guess what? He doesn't look good with Malkin either. That's a problem. But in these couple of games with Jeff Carter, I think he looks okay with him. If you can have Jason Zucker and Jeff Carter and maybe Evan Rodriguez as your third line, that's pretty scary depth. That's
interesting.
Especially when you consider you can have Bluger, Aston Reese, and Brock McKinn is, you know, what, maybe the best fourth line in hockey? One of the better ones for sure. And then you still have your top six with Crosby and Malkin. You know Sid's going to play with Rust and Gensel. So who does that leave Malkin with? He's good with Kapanen, but you still have a hole there on the left side. Just a thought. Danton Heinen's got 6 goals in 18 games. He's doing something right. He has a fairly high skill level. I don't know who would do the dirty work on that line if it was those three. It would not be Malkin or Kapanen, so I guess it would have to be Danton Heinen. Just a thought, though. You don't always need your six best forwards in the top six. Mm-hmm. We certainly saw that in 2016 with Phil Kessel on the third line. And if the Penguins were to, you know, pull that off and Heinen and Rodriguez keep producing, That's an unbelievably deep forward lineup. It really is. And that's probably something they can build on. Heinen has been a pleasant surprise. I didn't have real high expectations for him when the season started, but the guy's done nothing but score goals.
I'm really glad you brought up the McGinn Bluger line, because they have been, you know, in addition to being one of the better checking lines in the league, they're putting the puck in the net right now, and that's huge. And I wonder, when everybody does come back and they're slotted where they're supposed to be, like that's a lineup that I think can have really grown from playing without Crosby and Malkin for this time and be deeper and be able to just go four deep and roll them in the playoffs, which you'd really kind of need as your superstars get up in age where they are for these guys.
No, that's exactly right, Max. You don't want Crosby and Malkin playing 24 minutes a night in the playoffs. You just don't. And they don't want that either at their age. They know they're not as effective when they play that much. That Bluger line is so good. It's one of the best defensive lines in hockey. Zach Aston-Reese doesn't have a goal yet, and he's frustrating because you'd like to see him finish more. But he is so good defensively. My God. I mean, he is just a shutdown defensive player. And Bluger has kind of merged into that role as well. And Brock McKinn, you know, he's new to Penguins fans. I'll tell you a real quick story about McKinn. I'm going to name drop too, because it's fun. It's a podcast.
yeah, dude.
When the Penguins signed McKinn, I got a phone call from Pittsburgh's own Vince Trocheck later that day.
Vinny.
And he said, "Holy hell, are you going to love this guy?" He said, "This guy is an unbelievable player. You can play him top six some. He'll score. Play him bottom six. He gets the job done. He does everything." And he's been excellent. He really has. Those three are good together. That's a shutdown line. And they, like you said, Max, they can score too. They drive offense enough to the point. They're a good third line, I think. So if that's your fourth line, that's a scary amount of depth for a team that lost Brandon Tanev and Jared McCann in the offseason. To still have that kind of depth, that speaks volumes to that forward unit they have right now.
Mm-hmm. And then the other big story of the last week, and this will we'll let you go on this. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but the sale. The Lemieux Group selling to Fenway Sports Group. I know that's kind of odd timing because they go on this big trip right after that. But I don't know, man. Any stray thoughts? Any bits you've picked up over the last week there, as far as that situation is concerned?
Well, I will say that everybody I have spoken to or spoken with rather in the organization, they're more upbeat about this than you would think. Anytime an organization gets sold, or is about to be sold in this case, there's always some fear. I don't care how much money the people have.
Right.
But the sense is that there aren't really going to be any changes in the short term. Nobody's losing jobs. These people have an enormous amount of money. They want to win. We've always known that Mario and Ron Burkle were going to cash out at some point. It's been inevitable for a long time now. And the sense I get is if they were going to sell to anyone, these people were probably the way to go. I know some people will be concerned that there are no Pittsburgh ties. I think Cam Hayward, the Steelers defensive lineman, said something along these lines.
Yeah,
which caused a stir.
Cam sounded nervous. Yeah, that was really funny.
He did. Spoken like a Pittsburgh kid. But listen, the Penguins aren't going anywhere. These people, it's easy to say, oh, that's just, you know, just something to add to their portfolio. Well, maybe it is, but they don't strike me as the type who like to lose. They like to spend a lot of money. I'm kind of intrigued. And the biggest thing, and if those of you listening who aren't in Pittsburgh might not know about this, but there's an area of land around the arena, mm-hmm. and there's been a fight going on for more than a decade in terms of what to do with that land and to build it up, the bar and restaurant scene, et cetera. And I was told by someone in the organization that this is a priority for this group and that these people have negotiated these kinds of deals. They can get it done. It's embarrassing, really, what's transpired over the last decade with this situation. People listening in Pittsburgh know about it. So maybe some fresh eyeballs will help.
It's almost like the last ownership group didn't want to build it up at all, you know?
You think?
Parking.
I think they had other priorities.
Parking receipts are gold, baby. But no, that's one of the funny things about the Fenway Group. They've developed stuff around the ballpark in Boston. Yeah. They have that multi-pronged thing, right? That's why people are talking about streaming services, potentially, like all that sort of stuff. There's a level of ambition there, I think.
Yes.
That maybe we're not quite used to.
No, there is. And the Penguins aren't going anywhere. They've got a lease with the city. They can't go anywhere for 20 years. And the Fenway group, like, they were attracted to the Penguins, I think. They said, man, this is like a really well-run organization that makes money and a new building, great sports town. This is something we want to be involved in. They weren't trying to buy the Carolina Hurricanes or the New Jersey Devils. Like, they recognize the Penguins are a big deal. And you know, I think the price was right for Mario and Ron. It'll be very interesting to see how things go here in the next couple of weeks. But from everything I've been told, it's a done deal. It's just basically the paperwork at this point. And it's something to note. It's very interesting. But for a Penguin fan, I don't think there's any reason to be fearful.
No, there's no reason to be afraid of that group in the first place. Like, yeah, they added it to a portfolio, right? But it's an asset they want. It's an asset they want to make money off of and put money into over the next million years. So you got that going on. But the 30-year lease, the 7-year mandatory waiting period to apply for relocation by the league, like, the team's not going anywhere. Like, that's just not in the cards.
It's a model franchise, really. Mm-hmm. It's the most successful franchise in the NHL in the last 30 years. They generally are profitable. I mean, which not all hockey teams are, let's be honest. It's really probably a good move for the fan base. I don't think there's anything to be afraid of. Mario's still going to be around for what that's worth. I know that will make some people feel a little better. It's an interesting story, but it's not a bad one for Pittsburgh. I hear nothing but good things about this group. These people, they're winners. They want to win. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. This is not a bad thing for the Pittsburgh Penguins at all.
The only problem is they're deviating from the big organizational plan because they're in a playoff spot right now, which means they can't miss out and then win a lottery and start the entire process all over again. It's a shame for them.
Well, there is a fear. Like, you don't want to become the Maple Leafs like circa 95 through 2005, where, you know, you're always just barely making the playoffs, mm-hmm. but not really a legit contender. The Penguin way, as we know, is to find a way to draft Shane Wright in a few months.
Exactly. Bottom out and get lucky. They're gonna cycle back to that at some point. That's what they do.
All right,
buddy. We'll let you finish up the drive. I know you're somewhere in Western New York and have a few hours ahead of you. But no, appreciate the time. Travel safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, fellas. Take care.
See you, Josh. Thank you.
See you guys.
That was good stuff from Josh. He said he was, I don't even know if this came through because we were having connection issues, but he said he pulled over in Hamburg, New York, home of Patrick Kane. So yeah, dude's a gamer, took a long flight from Winnipeg and now is schlepping his way back down I-79 North, coming back to Pittsburgh. He's one of the greats.
Very nice of us to disrupt that already painless drive with a pullover on the highway with multiple reconnects to make that work.
I'm sure he found a good place to spot. Probably hit up some fun roadside food or whatever. If I know my dude, I'm sure that was part of the plan. But yeah, good stuff from Josh. We're gonna throw it to a break here, and then we'll be right back with a couple thoughts to finish up and send you guys out.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. I think a big part of the dialogue here in late November, and it's crazy to think, but two extra weeks out from Olympic hockey. It's time to seriously start thinking about these rosters. I know we're going to have a whole lot more on this on the site coming up soon. But as it relates to the U.S. Olympic team My big question right now, and Maxi, you can jump in and answer this if you want. Is it time to seriously consider putting Jack Campbell on the roster? Like, you look at the American goalies, situation's pretty good. Connor Hellebuck is, you know, no doubt starter. John Gibson's playing, you know, playing his whatever, has righted the ship this season versus the last couple. You got Thatcher Demko in the mix. He's certainly a guy who we sort of pegged to be on the roster initially. But man, Campbell's at 944. He kept the Maple Leafs afloat, I think, for a little bit earlier in the season. He's got international experience, as we all know. Is it time to seriously consider slotting Jack in there somewhere? I'm starting to believe it's yes. I can't, and you know, you look at those three guys I just mentioned and a couple others for that matter. I wouldn't have thought that was the case in like September, but I'm starting to get swayed over to that side.
The third goalie to me is such an interesting, like, how do you pick it? Because it's a guy who you're not expecting going in the tournament to play at all. Right. And so like, you got to have somebody who you know in there can handle that. And I do think, I don't know Jack Campbell personally. I know him solely from watching the Amazon series, but I do think he kind of has the personality that he could do well in that role.
Definitely. Someone said it. I can't remember who. So shout out to whoever said this on Twitter, but like, put Jack Campbell on the team just cause he'll up the vibes.
100%.
Like he's a fun dude to be around and a funny dude. Like the counter argument is that you look at say Demko and say maybe at some point down the line he's the number one guy, right? Like is maybe 4 years from now, maybe in various other international tournaments, like he seems like he could be a staple of the program moving forward. And that's no knock on Jack. It's just that Demko's got the contract, and he's got the cred, and he's got, you know, the history in the last couple of years to think that maybe if you're bringing a guy who's kind of in that developmental spot, and like maybe that's how you use your number three spot, right? As you say, this guy isn't going to contribute now necessarily, but he could down the road, and that's kind of what we need to use it for. But I don't know, man. You look at Al Campbell's plan. You look at the kind of dude he is. You know, you look at the story that he would bring to the Olympics in that team. I think I'm almost there. I'm about ready to pencil in Jack Campbell. Check back in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whenever we release our updated Olympic rosters for the Big Five. But I'm leaning in that direction.
Canada desperately trying to swing a trade for the citizenship of one of these many strong American goalies.
Who do you, is it Fleury? Like, is that just like no brainer now?
I think it probably is.
Because of what Price is going through, and because Carter Hart was horrific last year.
Hart probably makes,
can't turn stuff over to him. He's going to make the team. He's going to deserve it now. But like, he's, you know, whatever, 6 months removed from playing as badly as anybody we've ever seen, right?
Yeah, no, like, oh, I think Fleury's got to be your guy right there, right now.
And then the third goalie will be Thatcher Demko, acquired from Team USA for a conditional second round pick in the 2024 international draft or something.
No, you got to hold out for like Mark Stone or Matt Barzal or one of these guys who's going to be on Canada's third line.
No, we've established that Matt Barzal stinks now. He's having a bad season. So yeah, Canada, feel free to just flip him over to us.
How about Drake Matheson, like, who actually was born in Indiana? How about that?
We'll take him. We'll take him. Or one of the seven centers that we had on the initial roster. These guys can't all play. Give us Couturier. He was born in Arizona. Let's take one of them. You can have Thatcher Demko. It's fine.
Thatcher Demko for the other half of Sean Couturier's citizenship.
Who says no?
Oh, I love it. All right. I mean, I've been looking at this relocation stuff this week. And obviously the Quebec Premier, Francois Legault, saying on RDS that there could be some meetings with Gary Bettman about another team in Quebec. Jeff Merrick got a comment from Bill Daly basically saying they talked over the phone, but no meeting planned. And obviously, I think, you know, given the source on the initial one, like you can see some political lobbying outlines in favor. But I want to know, like, is Quebec even, if there's going to be a relocation, is Quebec even number one on that list right now for you, Sean?
It's Houston still, isn't it? Like, if you think that the Coyotes are the team that's in trouble, They had a very auspicious move to the Central Division recently, which coincidentally is the same time zone that Houston is in. I still think they're the one that makes sense. From a geographic standpoint, you can keep them in the West. The issue with Houston is that, you know, is that Tillman Fertitta, who owns the Rockets and has the lease to the arena there, a team would have to be owned by him. And he's talked about buying one in the past, but you know, the pandemic wasn't great for him. So the question, I guess, is whether the league is interested in Tillman Fertitta, and if Tillman Fertitta has the kind of cash that is willing to spend the cash on a hockey team. But you got to figure just from a lot of different perspectives, Houston makes sense. You know, that doesn't mean that the Quebec City stuff isn't interesting, but I don't know, man. What actually constitutes a meeting, right? Like, is it a meeting if you're the Quebec Premier and you call up Bill Daly or Gary Bettman? They're like, yeah, okay, we can talk about that eventually. Like, is that enough to go public with? I feel like this was a misstep by them, honestly.
Well, if you actually want to get a team, like, yeah, I think you're probably right, because at this point, like, now you're putting a spotlight pressure, like all these things that. You know, if I'm in the NHL shoes, I would not take especially kindly to having it brought to light this way if it was something I was seriously considering.
If you're the premier of Quebec, the only thing better than not getting a team is letting voters know that you're quote unquote trying to get a team, right? Like maybe it works out, it probably won't, but at the end of the day, like, this guy can hang his hat on the fact, like, oh yeah, we tried. We're doing our best here.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Quebec could support a team, like, you know, that is as passionate of a hockey region as exists. So if you want to bring one to Quebec City, I guess is where it would be. Like, I think that could be good for the league. I'm just not sure that the league necessarily is.
I mean, it'd be like Winnipeg Redux, right? Where you don't have like a strong corporate base there, but people are just so crazy about it that it works out financially one way or the other. I feel like this is something that, you know, it's a fun podcast discussion and it's a fun thing to kick around just as like a thought exercise, but it really doesn't feel like this is something we need to take all that seriously.
You know what the third best thing is behind being the premier who brings Quebec a team, being the premier who says they're trying to bring Quebec a team? The third best thing is being a podcaster who gets to keep talking about whether Quebec is getting a team.
Thank you, Francois Legault, or whatever this guy's name is. It's already out of my head. He's given us the perfect way to finish up this is the last post-Thanksgiving show period on the Athletic Hockey Show. That's actually not true. We have the Wednesday show coming up too.
They always say if you don't have an NHL team by Thanksgiving, you're probably not going to have one by the playoffs.
80% of all NHL teams in cities do not relocate by the end of the season. if they just stay put where they are in Thanksgiving. It's an old rule of thumb.
And I think it holds true this year, Sean.
All right, dude, what's going on? Any big Thanksgiving plans? Are you having a normal one up there? I hope you are.
Yes, we are. We're going to have Thanksgiving brunch with my girlfriend's mom in the morning, and then we're going to drive over to beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan. To see my family in the afternoon. So it should be a really good time. How about you?
The doubleheader. I'm proud of you.
Yep.
No, that's always been part of the mix for me. I typically eat at my mom's early and then head over to my grandma's on my dad's or my aunt's on my dad's side for the for round two / dessert / primetime football.
Two turkey meal guy, or are you like a pre-meal and then the turkey meal, or vice versa?
Oh, I'll typically go hard on turkey at my mom's and then make the second meal, like some leftovers, maybe hammer the sides there, and that's where I hit up the desserts, baby. It's pie time.
I feel like
it's brownie time.
Well, I feel like
it's whatever else.
We didn't do the obligatory draft your Thanksgiving plate thing here.
God, it's tired. Tired. It's been done. We're all about original thoughts here on the Athletic Hockey Show. That's why we're talking about NHL relocation.
When I was an intern, in Pittsburgh, I once asked Sean if I could steal somebody's tweet as my lead, And Sean was like, yeah, I haven't had an original thought in years. So I'm glad to see you both.
I do it all the time. I'm just an amalgamation of stolen shit. That's all I am. Love it, buddy. I hope you're back next week. Get out of here, Cousins. Never want to talk to you again. Max all day, every day. Let's roll. Happy Thanksgiving, dude.
Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me.
Max, thanks to you. And thanks to everybody who's listening to this, man. Thanks for listening to the Athletic Hockey Show. This show doesn't exist without you guys. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave a rating and review, as long as it's good. No 4-star reviews. We're 5 stars only here. You can also subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. And if you're listening to this, this is going to go live on November 23rd. You have 6 days to get in on our best deal of the year. Available right now through midnight on the 29th of November. $1 a month for 12 months when you visit theathletic.com hockey show. That is $12 for an entire year of everything that goes up on our site. So go ahead, get the sports coverage you know you deserve. It's not going to get any better than this. Next week, the plan is to have 2-time Stanley Cup champ Sean Thornton, Bruins legend. He just wrote a really, really fun book. We're going to have him on to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. And the return of my best friend, Craig Cousins. He's back, supposedly. Until then, happy Thanksgiving. To those listening in Canada, have an awesome day at work on Thursday and Friday. I think Christmas is in a month. That'll give you something to look forward to. Take care, and thanks again.